Hello, and welcome to a ThinkWorks special series, as your hosts Darren Smithson and Steve Lowe take us to the realm of unexplained mysteries.
Hello and welcome to ThinkWorks, a place where we do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this week we've got my old mucker, the professor himself, back in the studio. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Darren. Hello, everyone.
And we are doing another one of our unexplained mysteries. And this week we're going to talk about cryptozoology.
Mysterious creatures.
Yeah, so we're going to have a fun little just run through some of the most famous of these so-called cryptids. Which are these mythological creatures that could have a basis in fact.
Because there's no evidence to say they do not exist, right? Therefore they could do.
Yeah, and it's because of the sheer volume of sightings and all that kind of funky stuff. And the history, I mean, some of these go back into folklore and historical events and recordings, which is why we're going to mention them. But let's just talk a little bit about the whole idea of cryptozoology. And it's crypto means unknown, and zoology is creatures. So it made sense for it to be called cryptozoology, which actually, just as an interesting aside, you know, cryptocurrency, unknown currency.
Does it really
exist? There's a clue there, isn't there, in the name? Yeah. But yeah, so cryptozoology, it's basically... It uses scientific principles to conduct investigations, which I think is what a lot of enthusiasts would say, but it isn't acknowledged as a scientific discipline in its own right.
But the creatures themselves, mythological or not, are known as cryptids. Exactly. And we will go on to discuss this later, but cryptids, whether we agree in the particular myth or not, do actually exist.
Yeah.
It's in what format they exist.
Yeah. And as we've said, a lot of these have sprung out of historical context and folklore and superstitions in some ways, but there's always that little thing in the back of your brain that says, do you know what? Actually, just here, there might be something.
Exactly. And some of them go back to the 6th, 7th century, where there's been recordings and we're going to the carvings and, you know, proper written record of some of these things.
Yeah. So without further ado, we're going to go into discussing some of the most famous examples, which you're probably all aware of, and that includes the likes of the Yeti and the Bigfoot and Nessie. So where shall we start?
I think we'll start, this is the legend of the same beast. Yeah. I think we'll start with the Bigfoot.
Yeah,
which is what basically the USA call them.
Yeah,
and a very similar character to that creature, is the Sasquatch, which is what the Canadians call a very similar creature. So we're going to intertwine those names throughout, but we're meaning the same kind of creature.
Yeah. So what do we know about the Bigfoot, really?
They're a large, hairy, bipedal, primate-like creature, and the description varies in terms of height between 6 to 15 feet. Some say they have a foul smell. Some say they just move silently, although they actually make a very high-pitched cry. But the common denominator is they're quite a large beast, large footprints, but very secretive.
Yeah, and supposedly almost gentle unless you rile them. I think that's the legend, isn't it?
I think, for me, the USA, probably Bigfoot, but the Canadians, and certainly go back to the early tribes, a tribe called, and I think I've got this right, the word, the Salish tribe.
Yeah.
And Sasquatch comes from that name, which means wild men. And they've believed in this for centuries and centuries, so they believe they actually exist.
So apart from the fact that we know that some of the indigenous tribes of Canada and North America have caught stories about Bigfoot and Sasquatch in their folklore, Western-based sightings started around the 18th century.
There was one in 1811. It's a British explorer, David Thompson.
Yep.
He discovered a set of, as then yet, unidentified footprints, which then he spoke to the local indigenous people. They said, well, that's obviously a Sasquatch footprint. Now, even to this day, it's never been disproven, or it's never been proven what it is. So it's still an unknown entity.
Yeah, so we should describe that footprint. So it was 13 inches long with a claws on each of the toes.
There are varying descriptions of it. I mean, some have been measured at 24 inches long and 8 inches wide, which, funny enough, and we'll go on to this as well, is very similar size to a bear's paw print, but with a different structure in terms of where the feet are planted on the actual ground.
Yes, because it was walking upright.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, correct.
It's fascinating, isn't it, how these things can suddenly gather a pace as well, because there were sightings as forests were cut back to make way for settlers, and so the more and more they were encroaching on the wild, the number of sightings of this kind of beast started to go up.
You've also got to think, and I mean, I was going to mention this later, but I'll mention it now. You've got to think about, and even today, so now you're going back 300, 400, 500 years.
Yeah.
A lot of these sightings are actually in British Columbia.
Yes.
Right, okay. And there's a place there called the Harrison River, and it does become a very popular conversation we'll have later. But there's wilderness and deep, dense forests that stretch from British Columbia all the way to Alaska.
Yeah.
Right? And even now, most of them are uninhabitable. Right? It covers a range of about 250,000 square miles.
Yeah.
Put it in perspective, England is 50,000 square miles.
Yeah.
So you've got an area five times the size of England.
Yeah.
That has been uncharted, but it's...
It's largely unexplored.
Exactly. Yeah. So things could be out there we don't know about.
So we've got those early sightings in the 1800s, but it was the 1900s, I think, where it started to gather pace, these sightings of Bigfoot.
Well, there's something... it's become known as the Ape Canyon Incident in 1924. There were a group of gold prospectors, obviously searching for gold, and they believe they encountered what they're calling a gorilla men, which the locals call the Sasquatch. And the prospectors actually wounded one of the creatures during the day. Then what they're now terming as mountain devils came at night and actually started throwing boulders at the cabins and ramming the structure.
Yeah.
Okay. None of the prospectors were actually hurt, but the next morning there was footprints, large footprints, as we described, all over the site. So they then fled, went, reported it back to the authorities.
Yeah, and the story goes that initially they saw the large creature, two of them. Fred Beck was the lead prospector, and they shot at it, thinking it was a bear. But then they saw that it wasn't a bear, it was just very big and had become very angry, as you would be if you were shot at. So they scarpered, I mean, you would. But then, as you say, all of them were inside the cabin.
But then what happened, they reported this back, the forest rangers came and had a look and couldn't quite determine what footprint it was.
Yeah.
They thought it was a bear. But then you've got five prospectors coming back into various towns and areas, just spreading what they've heard and seen. So you can imagine now why the actual legend, or the belief that there's a creature out there exists.
And a colony as well.
Not just one. Exactly, yeah.
So that's quite interesting, because I think another sighting saw two Sasquatch, one quite tall, one a little bit smaller. Yeah. And so the guess is that one was male, one was female. But that could be a dangerous assumption, because in some species the female is larger than the male. But either way, it looked like two different...
It could have been an infant.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah. So what other sightings?
I think this is probably one of the famous ones, which is what's known as the Patterson-Gimlin film.
Yes.
So you got two friends, Roger Patterson and a Robert Gimlin. They were actually Bigfoot Sasquatch enthusiasts, obviously.
Yeah.
And they were out in Northern California doing a docudrama. And as per chance, right, they actually came across what they're classing as a Bigfoot.
Yes.
Right. But they filmed it. And there's a 59-second film, which has now become iconic.
Yeah.
You know, that is shown every time you discuss a Bigfoot, that film is shown.
Yeah, and just to describe it to our listeners, it's basically the footage shows it kind of strolling, in a way, across a background of the forest in the background, some boulders in the forefront, and there was a little stream or river in the shot as well. And it turns at one point and looks at them, and then ignores them and continues walking. Now, if you've seen the video, I mean, to me, it does look like a man in a gorilla suit, but we're talking about 1967. We're not talking about, you know, the year 2000, and it must have cost a fortune to make that.
But not only that, though, I know you've got perspective and depth of cameras and videos and stuff, but even with that, taking into consideration the size of the trees, the boulders, it would be an exceptionally tall person.
Yeah, yeah.
So even to this day, scientists, zoologists are still scrutinising this video, and it's still inconclusive to what it actually is. Nobody can pinpoint it's definitely a man or it's not, as a creature.
Yeah.
It does look ape-like. And it is on 2 feet, and it is very, very tall.
Yeah, and neither of the two guys have ever admitted it was any kind of fraud or just fooling around. It's difficult. I think what we might do is we always say this, with this, we've got a forum where we have a point where you can come and discuss. I think what we might do is we might put the video into that forum post. So listen out for details at the end about where that post is. But we'll do that. We'll put the video up so people can actually have a look at it and comment. I'm sure we'll get some very thoughtful considerations put forward and quite a few laughs.
But it's nearly 60 years old.
It is.
You know, so you've got to think about the technology they had at the time, and don't compare it what you can do now with CGI and stuff like that.
Yeah, which is... It's interesting how people, modern people... People of a certain generation, they look at classic films and classic TV series, whatever, and then they go, yeah, but that's rubbish, because they're looking at the special effects from the point of view of today rather than this was groundbreaking at the time.
Absolutely.
And what's quite interesting, I mean, obviously we've already said that the Canadians have always referred to it really as Sasquatch, because that's the original term given to it by the Indian tribes that were habiting Canada, what is now Canada, at the time. But the name Bigfoot got momentum and traction in North America because of the sighting by Jerry Crew.
Jerry Crew is the one who actually is reportedly found this.
Yeah.
But when he went back to speak to his co-worker, he said, you won't believe what I've just found out there, this 16-inch human-like footprint.
Yeah.
Some of his co-workers said, we've seen some of those on different sites.
Yeah.
And so that collectively they said, well, that's a Bigfoot, isn't it?
Yes.
And it became known as Bigfoot.
Bigfoot, yeah. And Associated Press got the story from Jerry, didn't they? And that's how it became suddenly... This creature became Bigfoot. So what's your feeling on Bigfoot? Before we move on to its cousin, the Yeti, what's your feeling?
My feeling is I look at this. I mean, obviously the indigenous tribes think it's real.
Yeah.
They also think it's shape-shifting, it's very spiritual, and then can take this form of a ape, bear, you know, semi-human man, whatever it may be. So there's some precedence that says there's something out there. We have not listed all these notable sightings, but there are 37 reported ones.
Yeah.
And they've been around since the 1900s. Yeah. And just to put this in perspective, 26% of Canadians believe that cryptids, such as the Sasquatch, do exist.
Yeah.
And there's a town now, and I mentioned Harrison River before, well, it's called Harrison Hot Springs.
Yeah.
They actually have a museum dedicated to the Sasquatch. So I think there's something out there, to be honest. Whether it is a ape-like, man-like creature going around, not causing much harm, by the way.
Yeah.
They're just there. There might be something out there. It's a vast, vast, dense forest of tens of thousands of square miles.
Yeah.
We're still discovering new creatures.
We are.
Yeah. What's to say that that's not one?
Yeah, and we're still discovering creatures that we think, in environments where we said 10 years ago nothing could exist, and yet we're finding life does always find a way. So exactly. It's fascinating to look at Bigfoot from that perspective. So let's look at his cousin then, the Yeti.
Akka, Abominable Snowman.
Yes. I think the legend of the Abominable Snowman is actually, it's probably something that strikes more awe and fear among certainly the Western audiences than Bigfoot does.
I think that is a Western thing because of the 1950s, they had it as a big, shaggy, white, you know, creature. And then we did it into films and there is the books and that. But the local people, right, don't describe that at all. So we've got this Abominable Snowman, which is not does not exist in the local actual communities.
Yeah.
It is known as the Yeti, which actually is name, you translate that, it's called the Rocky Bear.
Yeah, and I think the local tribes, they see the Yeti pretty much as a protector of the mountain.
Correct.
So it's almost like, you know, it's responsible for making sure that the mountain is safe or isn't getting unduly damaged.
But these stories, legends, myths, whatever you want to call it, have been passed down for generations and generations and generations, which is why it still exists today.
Yeah.
Right. But these folks are not saying, "Oh, watch the Yeti," or like, "Watch the Boogeyman." They're saying this is a real creature. They also say it can be part spirit.
Yeah. Right,
which is protecting the mountain and protecting the people. And to add to that, a lot of Western explorers who began visiting the Himalayan mountains in the 19th and the 20th century, they would give written accounts of what they saw, which was witnessed by multiple people. And it does describe a large 8-9 foot creature wandering around the Himalayas.
Yeah.
Right. And I also want to just say as well, think about what we said about the Bigfoot. You've got this 200,000 square miles of forest, dense wilderness, you've got a very similar sized land in the Himalayas with hundreds of peaks which we've never been to,
and you have to, and that's why the Lost World, and also I wanted to say Xanadu, but I don't mean Xanadu, there's the fictitious Shangri-La, these fictitious legends of hidden cities, that's because of that vast size. And again, an unexplored area. It's quite amazing, really, that when you think about it. And also, you have to remember, initial Western stories of the Yeti were discounted because, oh, nothing could live up there, nothing, you know, can survive. But we now know that actually there are other creatures quite happily surviving those mountains because they're away from civilization.
And one of the theories was, well, obviously it's not something unknown. It could be a polar bear.
Yeah.
Now, polar bears, as we know, are not native to the Himalayas, but the original thoughts and theories were that a polar bear could have been on a, we're talking about a long time ago, on an ice floe that worked its way somehow south, and it was deposited then in the Himalayas.
Yeah.
I personally don't get that at all. No. But it's an option that people have put forward.
You also got the whole idea, I mean, thinking of polar bears or white bears, you've also got the idea that there's the tectonic plate shifting, so continents have shifted over the millennia. And so it's quite possible that isolated clumps of different creatures that aren't necessarily native to a particular geography were isolated by a sudden break in the landmass.
And that's the evolution of the species that we talk about, and we have cross breeding and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think the other thing as well, we talk about bears, is that the brown bear has also been identified. There is actually an Himalayan brown bear.
Yeah.
And if you listen to the Western views of what it is, this big shaggy white thing, the locals always say, no, it's a reddish brown fur, right? Very adaptive to high altitude. So the Himalayan brown bear does fit into that.
Yeah. So, well, it could be. I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate now. So the sightings of this big, huge, white creature could well be this red-brown bear, but it's been in the snow.
Could well be.
So it could be. Suddenly it's a blizzard. It's covered in snow. Bears do tend to, when they're feeling threatened, stand on their hind.
Exactly.
So it could be. I mean, even if that's the case, that in itself is an amazing story, if it's true.
It is. But we talked about Western and explorers, but even up to the last, let's say, two or three decades,
yeah.
trekkers and climbers are still saying they are seeing things or evidence of things
yeah.
that do not just make sense. They're yeah. not in the natural world.
Yeah. Now, we should point out at this point, I mean, to be fair, we love this whole idea of the fact that these cryptids exist. I mean, it's just, to us, it's a mysterious world.
Mm-hmm.
But to be fair, and to put the counterpoints forward, scientists and zoologists have analysed hairs that have been found and always found them to be part of another creature rather than some unknown creature. So far, there is no scientific evidence for either the Yeti or Sasquatch / Bigfoot. But the sheer volume of stories... I'm not just talking about the Western... You see, in the West, we've got this bias, haven't we? It's like, if a Westerner hasn't seen it, then it can't be true.
Exactly.
But we have got Western eye accounts of these creatures. But the sheer folklore records of the indigenous people in these areas... which spans centuries, you look at that volume of stories and records, and yes, a lot of it is verbal stories handed down from generation to generation, but it's there. It's all there. And so everything has to have a start point. So where did these creatures become part of that folklore of those tribes?
So Darren mentioned there was no scientific evidence to some of these light hair strands that have been found, which says, well, that's not a unknown animal, that's yeah. so-and-so. By the same token, they haven't proven there isn't a Yeti and there isn't a Sasquatch. And for all you non-believers out there, okay, think about religion, right? There's nothing to prove Jesus does not exist.
Yeah.
But there's nothing to prove he does either.
Yeah.
But we all of us, most religious people, believe he did.
Yeah.
Right? The local people believe this creature exists because they've seen it
yeah.
with their own eyes. They've felt yeah. it. They've seen the evidence of it. So it's not just a case of, well, we can't prove it is. You can't prove it isn't.
No. And and this is the problem. I mean, again, it comes back to what we were discussing when we were talking about the Bermuda Triangle. We know more, sometimes it feels like we know more about the surface of the moon than we do about our own planet. It's crazy that we've got all these vast unexplored areas that, yeah, we've got Google Earth and we've got the satellite pictures scanning and taking these high resolution photos from orbit, so in theory we can create a virtual 3D Earth, but you can't beat people on the ground with proper equipment surveying, recording, taking photos and films, picking up evidence. And that's why I think the cryptozoologists that go on these safaris, whether you think they're kooks or they're misguided, they do try to use scientific principles, and in the process of their treks have discovered extensive folklore history, which is always fascinating anyway. But they've also stumbled across potential reasons and other creatures that we didn't know existed at the time.
Exactly. You know, one of these cryptids we talked about, yeah? Things like an octopus.
Yeah.
Even the kangaroo, okay? Even the Komodo dragon.
Seahorse.
They were all fictitious. Myths didn't exist. Now this technique was granted.
Yeah.
So why can't there be something else out there we haven't discovered?
Yeah.
I want to add to that as well, Darren, is that, and this is a fact, this is reported, yeah? Sir David Attenborough,
yeah.
right, probably known worldwide, yeah? He was asked in an interview in 2013, did he think there was any still big creatures out there for science to discover? After a little pause, he went, yes, the Yeti. So even he believes there's something out there that yeah. we haven't yet found. Now, we do know there was a giant ape actually was in the Himalayas many thousand years ago, because they've got fossils, evidence yeah. of it. And I'm going to try and pronounce this, guys. Gigantopithecus.
Wow.
Wow, exactly.
Well done.
Exactly. Now, the descendants of that creature is the orangutan. So David Attenborough said there's no reason to not believe there is something, an an age-old ancestor of the orangutan, which what people say in the Yeti could resemble, does actually exist in the remotest parts of the Himalaya Mountains.
Yeah, because we know that way back in the history of humanity's evolution, the two different species of humanity, of humans, did coexist for quite some time before Cro-Magnon. Is it Cro-Magnon that died out? I can't remember which one it is, but basically there were two strands that went, and one became Homo sapien and the other one eventually died out. But there is evidence that there was some crossbreeding, and there's evidence that they coexisted for quite some decades, hundreds of years, before one of the branches actually died out. So why not with this? The orangutan is one offshoot, the one that's successful and has prospered, and there's another one that is more rare, more, it might even be dying out, but it's an evolution strand to a particular beast.
And I'm going back to the famous Sir David Attenborough mentioned this. If you think about Sir Edmund Hillary.
Yes.
Okay. And this is a quote, right? He said, "Until you've walked for days in the Himalayas, it's hard to appreciate just how vast and inaccessible so many of these mountains and valleys really are. And how rarely, if ever, the majority see any human activity."
Yeah.
So the landscape's there, right, for something to be there that we cannot explain. You have rare sightings. They may come more into more the human communities.
Yes.
But for most of the part, they're just out there surviving.
And the nuance of that quote is he couldn't say he could find evidence of humans. So does that mean that humans don't exist? that's the thinking, is it? Oh, we can't find evidence of a Yeti, therefore it doesn't exist. But what he's saying is it's so vast you can walk for days and not find any evidence at all of humans.
Mm.
So it's the same principle, really.
I agree. But it's, I mean, the Yeti, or in the Western call it, the Abominable Snowman, it's going to live on. I mean, you think about it, modern video games that kids play today, like Uncharted and Far Cry, the Yeti's in there.
Yeah.
So it's in your psyche already, you know.
It is.
Even Scooby-Doo has an episode of the Yeti.
Pesky kids. And they got away with it, not for those pesky kids.
So I think for me, Darren, as we mentioned about the Bigfoot, possibly could be, I am more inclined to think that the Yeti, as we call it, is more real.
Yeah.
I really do, because I just think there's something out there, right, that we can't explain.
Yeah, I think you might be right there. Certainly the romantic in me wants the Yeti to exist, because I prefer the idea of the Yeti rather than the Abominable Snowman. So in other words, the Yeti is as the protector of those mountain tribes.
And I feel the same. I prefer to believe in the Sasquatch in the Canadian tribal regions than I do in the Bigfoot in America.
Yeah. So a different creature entirely from Bigfoot and Yeti is the one that I have real difficulty pronouncing. So you're going to say it.
I believe it's the Chupacabra.
That's the one. So what do we know about this creature?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Darren. Did not know a lot until we decided to discuss it. But I am absolutely fascinated by this. Because out of the two, three we've discussed so far, this is the one I think is more realistic and possible.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, let's go back to, it's all about Latin America. So we've dealt with Himalayas, we've dealt with North America, Canada. Now we're going to go into Latin America.
Yeah.
Okay. So the locals call this a goat sucker when you translate it into English.
Yeah.
Okay. But as we'll find out, it doesn't just suck goats. But basically, it attacks animals, consumes all their blood. And it's even been known to drain the blood of dead people it's come across.
Yes.
All right. They've been reported officially in the 1950s, but they've been around for a lot longer in terms of the folklore of the local communities there.
Yeah, and I think what's fascinating about this particular creature is there are so many similar descriptions of what it is. And it's not just South America and Latin America. It's also found its way into some of the American states as well. So it's almost like it's migrating as conditions change. And so we've got this whole lore that's built up about this creature. And as we said, initially it's feeding on animals. Dead people came into the mix a little bit later. And now it's morphed. And this is where we're going to complete utter fantasy. And we'll go back to the core creature in a moment. But in recent kind of decades, it's kind of morphed into a shapeshifter that can feed and trick humans, offer humans,
yeah,
as well.
And it's like a vampire-like creature.
Yeah.
It sounds a bit silly. We know we're not talking about Dracula and that, but we know they are vampire bats.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's become like a vampire creature. And a lot of, certainly in remote areas, certainly like lots of farmsteads and that in Latin America, South America, they believe it's a very real thing. And there is evidence to show that there is something out there,
yeah,
that is actually killing their livestock.
Yeah.
I mean, brutally killing them.
Right. So let's get back to the core creature then. So what do the descriptions, before it became morphed into this shape-shifting entity, what were the core descriptions of these creatures?
There is a common denominator again. I mean, it does vary. Sometimes it can be on two legs. Predominantly, though, it's on four legs. It is very coyote, canine-like.
Yeah.
But it's basically got no hairs on its body. It has spines going down the back from its neck right down to its tail. It's been seen as having red eyes.
Yes.
Quite fiery red eyes. Really sharp teeth. You say, well, that's just obviously a very big dog, so to speak. But it's how the killings have taken place. And there are some famous sightings that have been reported.
Okay, give me a couple of examples.
It's also important to say, and Darren touched on this, that it's not just related to Latin America. There was a sighting in 1955-56, a very similar creature, which was in Arizona, in North America.
Yeah.
Okay. So this thing, in terms of, forget myth, forget folklore, this creature, right, has been on our radar for nearly 70 years. One of the famous things is, it's a place called, I think it's pronounced Moca.
Yes.
Moca in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Where they were actually dubbed the Vampire of Moca, right? The thing is, it attacked this herd of cows, I think it was, or livestock.
Yeah.
Right. And all of them had puncture marks to the wound. All of them had a lot of blood loss, but the carcasses had not been eaten.
Yeah.
The carcass was left intact.
It was just the blood.
Which is implied that they were just after the blood.
Which, I mean, we know that certain creatures, certain insects, want your blood. They're not interested in flesh as such. But for some kind of mammal or reptilian creature to only want blood, it's very unusual.
It is unusual. Very unusual.
So we've got the Vampire of Moca. I love that. I think we ought to do a whole comic.
Vampire of Moca.
A whole horror comic about the Vampire of Moca. I think it's how this creature has become. It's almost like in Latin America, in certain areas, the people are very fearful of this creature now, because obviously they attribute supernatural type powers to this creature, even if it is just literally killing animals and pets and what have you. It's almost as if it arrives without anyone noticing, it kills without anyone noticing, and then leaves without anyone noticing until someone stumbles over a carcass of an animal.
Correct. And there's a, just bring it up to the like more modern times, in 2023, a farmer and his farm hands witnessed a very mysterious entity moving across one of their fields.
Yes.
Right? Couldn't really identify what it was. Moved off into the bush, the woods, wherever. And next morning, they found a number of livestock completely lifeless, drained of blood. Is that a coincidence?
Yeah. I mean, I know some theories have been put forward that it's some kind of satanic cult. The fact is that the sightings are not just restricted to one particular part of Latin America.
Correct.
They are spread, and there is a almost like a migration. You can trace a path through the history of the sightings, as you say, reaching Arizona, the southern states of America. And you think, is there some kind of creature or a pack of this creature that is moving with civilization and realizing actually we've got some easy pickings if we stay with civilization, because we can get the pets, we can get the farmstead. animals.
Easy pickings.
Yeah. Easy pickings.
There's, I mean, and that's great, Darren. Just to bring it back to like another example, right? And this you can go on. I haven't actually seen it. I have read it, but I think you can go online and see this. Is there's a very eerie drone footage, right, which is captured near a place called Ura City.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that might be in Chile. I may be wrong. And this is a very shadowy figure wandering through a field on all fours,
yeah,
standing up, going back down on all fours, right, and then moving off the field.
Yes.
Again, the next day, cows, llamas, alpacas were found slain, the unique neck injuries,
yes,
and a severe loss of blood.
Oh, I mean, that is spooky, isn't it?
It could be coincidence, yeah, but it's just, there's some consistent things coming up here, themes.
Yeah, so again, what we'll do is, for the forum post that goes along with the podcast, which we'll mention at the end of the show, we ought to put the video for that up as well, if we can find it. Mm. So, and also the actual drawings and photographs of some of the other creatures we've discussed for people to peruse. So that I'll do that over the weekend. I'll go and get all these links and everything.
Great stuff.
Is there anything else you want to say about this beastie?
I'm going to throw this in, Darren, because I know you love all this kind of stuff, all right? With the shape of the actual creature, it does have an oval-shaped head.
Yes.
Okay. And there are these these UFO people.
Oh, aliens had to be here somewhere.
I have to bring it in, who believe that it's some kind of creature left behind from an outer space visitor.
Yes.
There are some who even said that NASA, CIA, whoever have been doing
the Men in
experiments on an alien creature, they've crossbred it with some other creature, it's escaped.
Yeah.
I mean, they're ones I do not believe in, but...
Although, if you look at the timeline for when this creature initially started to be seen and reported, that's when we were starting to do all kinds of genetic experiments. Just saying.
Ooh.
Where's Mulder and Scully when you need them? Right.
One thing just to like put a bit of science into it, let's say, yeah, is people have said, well, okay, it's a dog, coyote, which have a condition called
mange.
Yeah. A mange actually results in a lot of hair loss. The dehydration they have because of that means the skin grows quite dark and scaly, because we've heard about, yeah, lizard-like kind of thing. So are these, you know, chupacabra actually, yeah, mange dogs?
Yes.
I don't know if they are, obviously. They've got some severe skin disease. So when they've done autopsies on these creatures with mange and that, and they've looked at the cause of death, there's no excessive blood in the gut at, yeah, all, which you would think if they've been drinking lots of blood, they would, yeah, have there. So, you know, you think... Is it or is it not one of these mange dogs?
And yeah, also, I think they've assessed that genetically speaking, there was no need for that animal to drink blood to survive. It just needed normal nutrients like any animal.
The only other thing I'm thinking about, Darren, is if they've got mange, yeah, and they are weak,
yeah,
certainly the wild dogs or coyotes, they won't be able to hunt their normal prey.
Yeah.
So in desperation, they may attack. A very simple picking, like a cow or a sheep. Yeah. That's an option for, yeah, that, yeah,
yeah.
But to me, mate, could it be real? I think there is. Of these,
there's something, I think.
Yeah, these killings took place. There's, yeah, evidence the animals are dead, they've had, yeah, the necks cut, and there's lots of blood gone. Yeah,
yeah, and
but until you prove the existence of a chupacabra,
yes,
it'll always remain a mystery.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's definitely something there.
Yeah.
It's just that we don't know what it is.
This one sparked my interest more than the previous two.
Yeah, you're glad I suggested,
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there we go. So, let's wrap this up with one last monster then. And I think, really, there's only one place we can go, and that's Scotland.
It is.
And I think people already have guessed what the creature we're going to discuss is. It's our friendly neighbourhood... Nessie,
the Loch Ness Monster.
Right, so what do we know about the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, the thing is, again, it's one of these things that's been around in legend and folklore since 6th, 7th century.
Yeah, 585, 585 was the first reporting.
So you've got, like, the Picts, which were obviously one of the earlier settlers in Scotland, there's been cave drawings. There have even been little stone models showing some kind of massive sea creature that actually persisted throughout parts of Scotland, and particularly around Loch Ness.
I think it was 565, the first recording, a priest recorded that he battled with a devilish sea creature to save a fisherman.
St. Columba.
Yeah.
That's his name.
Yeah, I
remember that now. I remember that.
565, these stories started in 565, and this is only the first properly recorded.
That's only because he was a saint, and obviously he was educated, he could write, he could spell, he could write, and so forth. But even for centuries, in terms of folklore, locals have always spoke about strange sightings in the loch. They always thought there might be supernatural forces, or maybe a large unknown animal.
Yeah.
But as things have moved on, it's just grown into what we now know as
a whole industry.
as Nessie, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the Loch Ness Monster. I mean, it again, the romantic in you wants that creature to exist. This almost benign, shy sea creature that lives in a lake rather than in the sea, and doesn't harm anyone. It just literally wants to go about its business and eat whatever fish stock is in the lake.
And that's where I start having. We're going to the sightings, and we'll go into where it evolved from. But that's where I have some problems with it.
Yeah.
If there is this large sea creature in the loch, one of the issues I have with it, if it's going to be so big, is the macro system, the ecosystem in there with the actual other creatures, would not be enough to sustain a creature of that size.
Yeah, agreed. However, and this is where it gets quite interesting, because there are theories that have been put out that there is a secret hidden tunnel somewhere under the lake bed that actually goes out to the sea, and therefore this creature moves back and forth. It comes into the lake because it's easier pickings for the fish than in the sea, and therefore migrates back and forth to the sea. Interestingly, no one's ever found this hidden tunnel, either on this side of land or into the sea itself. But it's a whole network, apparently, of these underground water tunnels.
And also, it's not to say there's not some humongous caves low down, but they've done so many sonar readings and none of these caves have actually been found.
No. And I think, I mean, again, we'll put some of the pictures and that infamous video of the Plesiosaurus,
which I think it might be, which has been extinct for many, many millions of years. Yeah. But the thing is, again, that is a cold-blooded creature.
Yeah.
How is it going to live in a lake?
In Scotland. Which is, it's pretty cold up there.
Yeah.
So in that particular part of Scotland. Yeah, so not saying Scotland generally.
I don't know. I mean, I'm probably answering the final question here. Do I believe this exists? No.
No.
No. But there are some very, in the modern era, some very famous sightings and a very famous photograph known as the Surgeon's Photograph.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. Which does show a long neck and a head emerging from the water. And it's become very iconic, hasn't it? I mean, whenever he talks about it,
you see the T-shirt.
You see it everywhere. Yeah, you see it absolutely everywhere. Now, the thing, it was shown to be a hoax. Apparently, it was a toy submarine which had some kind of things on it and stuff like that. But as all sceptics do, they believe that was squashed by the authorities to hide the truth.
Yes.
So they still believe there is a Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah, and I think personally, because there is evidence that they used to exist in the lake, a colony of giant eels. And I personally would, I mean, you could just imagine the eel coming up, going back under the water. It would look like a head with a big neck.
Well, some of the samples they did a DNA checks of all creatures, all samples, anything they could find, whether it was feces, whether it was dead things. Yeah. And they do say there's DNA there to actually suggest there is a large eel-like creature still in the actual in the loch.
Yeah.
That I can believe.
And you have to think about this as well. I mean, we know that we can often get turned around when it comes to perspective. So if you're on the edge of the lock, or if you're on a road going around the lock and it's misty, it's twilight, and you see something flip out of the mist suddenly, you can think that this is a huge creature, but your perspective might be that's literally because it's really close up to you on the edge of the water, whereas they think it's in the middle of the lake. And you've got all these different things to consider when it comes to Nessie. I personally, romantically, I would love Nessie to exist, but I think it's more likely there was a colony of giant eels in there. We do know that there probably was some kind of cataclysm that formed the lake in the first place, between landlock and, you know, landmasses colliding or breaking off or whatever. And there could well have been at one point an underground access point or cove into the sea, which has since collapsed and filled up.
Could be, yeah. But you've got to think as well is that the reason why this thing actually grows each year, you know, the legend, the myth, is...
Tourism.
Well, I was going to say that, but also in the 1970s, at the height of the frenzy of we've got this creature,
yeah.
There was a team used small submarines to explore the depths of Loch Ness and went further down, because it's quite a deep lock.
Yeah.
People saying, well, why are they doing that?
Yes.
There must be something there. So that story just grew and grew and grew. But you hit the nail on the head there, tourism. Certainly the Scottish government and the tourist industry in that area want it to be real. Yeah. I mean, I read somewhere that they make between 60 and 70 million pounds a year
just from visitors
yeah. for Loch Ness. So it works in different areas for people to actually perpetuate that.
Yeah, I think we want Nessie to exist, and therefore if you want something to exist, you can find proof. It's like every other human endeavor. If you really want something to be true, or you believe something to be true, no matter what evidence is presented to you to the contrary, you will find a way to invert that evidence onto its head.
One thing as well I'd like to say, which I think is a positive thing, whether you believe it or not, because over the decades we have tried, yeah. scientists have tried, geologists have tried, to prove or disprove Nessie, it has actually contributed to scientific improvements around underwater exploration and sonar technology.
Yes.
Because they've had to develop better things to try and... So that's actually helped,
yeah.
you know, that the scientific community by looking for Nessie.
Yeah. And again, this is where cryptozoology comes into its own, because... I mean, yeah, like every other discipline or every other endeavour that humans undertake, you will get, you know, the tinfoil hat brigade involved in that. But there are also some very serious people who have got scientific training who are investigating some of these particular sightings. They haven't found any evidence yet, but as you say, they haven't found any conclusive evidence to say definitely not. And also, I mean, although there is, you can't go to university and do a cryptozoology course, not in a major proper university anyway, cryptozoology does form part of some of the other courses that you can do, including folklore and superstition. Mm-hmm. But also in terms of just zoology as a whole, it's mentioned in some of the courses that you can do. It's there as a module. This whole idea of cryptids just being out there waiting to be discovered.
Mm. Which I think they still are. I really do think still are. Maybe not in a loch in Scotland, but maybe somewhere in the Himalayas, yeah. in the dense forests of America, in the seabeds, because we're still finding new creatures all the time.
Yeah, and I think another episode that we could do in the future is definitely a whole look at USOs. We mentioned them about the Bermuda Triangle, but these these unidentified sea creatures or sea objects. Or organisms,
the Kraken,
yeah, the Kraken, and what have you. And we could go, I mean, we could do another episode on cryptozoology, but looking at the sea
and the sirens and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be fab.
But just conclude Nessie. I mean, for me, Nessie, it is quaint,
yeah.
It'd be nice, like you said, if it did exist, there'd be an absolute, I'd be freaking out if it actually did. But the thing is, it's a curiosity, it's a mystery. And I think whatever it's out there, it has earned and will continue to earn a place in our hearts,
yeah,
and also in cryptozoology.
Yeah, I just love the whole idea that humans still have this need for mystery. We still have this need for legend. We still have this need to keep exploring, to try and push our knowledge, but also letting our imaginations create these creatures. It's fabulous.
Why climb a mountain? Because it's there.
Yeah.
We do not accept what's put in front of us.
No.
So when somebody says, there's no such thing as Nessie, I'm going to prove there is.
It might be mad, but, you know, hey, it's what differentiates us from the other creatures on this planet. Right. The fact that we instinctively, in many cases, I think, are explorers. Not in terms of, and I'm talking about humanity as a whole, I'm not talking about, you know, just us. I think instinctively we do want to see what's around the corner. We just have this need to just, what is over that fence? What is over that boundary? Why is there a boundary? And, you know, without people asking those questions, we'd still be stuck in caves.
I was just about to say that. I mean, yes, there's been evolution, but you look at a lion 1,000 years ago,
yeah,
living and doing the exact same thing,
yeah,
he did 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
We are not.
No.
Well, not all of us are, anyway.
No. Right, so wrapping it all up then into a kind of conclusion, I think we will revisit cryptozoology in a future unexplained mysteries episode, and we'll look at the sea. I think we need to look at the sea.
There's so much we don't know about it.
Yeah, and I'm sure at some point, even in that discussion, aliens will rear their ugly head, as they do in every kind of unexplained mystery. I'm surprised that there wasn't a theory put forward about Jack the Ripper being an alien visitor who just came every now and again and ate humans.
Could be a shapeshifter. Yeah. You never know.
So, but yeah, so we'll do that. And let's just wrap it up. So, we know that there are mysterious creatures still out there to be found. We're still finding them. I mean, look at that fish that someone dredged up from the ocean only about, what, 5-6 years ago? It was supposed to be extinct millions of years ago. And there it is.
And no way it could have survived at that depth.
No.
It did.
Yeah. It's just, there are so many things we don't know. So, cryptozoology, I think, actually, cryptozoology should be formalized as a proper scientific discipline, and the study of cryptids, and we're not talking about the mythological creatures, we're talking about a whole discipline of science that is there to explore and search for creatures that we currently do not know exist.
Prime example on 2 feet, a kangaroo,
yeah,
was a cryptid for many, many, many centuries.
Yeah.
And then now we know it's a real creature.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got all that to look forward to, and that'll be great. Now, we've mentioned the forum. So if you go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum, there's a room in there that is for ThinkWorks, obviously. And then you go into that room and you'll find there's a post that is relevant to this specific episode. In that, I think we will put photos and we'll put the video links in there. Yeah. I think we can even embed the videos directly now. So, and then you can all have a look and then come and tell us your favourite mysterious creature that you would like us to maybe examine in a future episode.
That'd be great.
That'd be great fun. And I think going forward, we also want to do an episode. It's not really an unexplained mystery, but we'll do it under this banner. Because you might be aware that we haven't touched the theme of vampire, werewolves or zombies. And the reason for that is we want to do them separately.
Correct. And we're not talking about the Dracula, right? We're not talking about the... Well, we are talking about some kind of werewolf.
The legend of Dracula.
But it's about the legends came through and where there are some similarities to what evidence can prove there are certain things out there.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think that'll be good fun to do that one. Any last words, Stephen?
No, just that. Thank you for your time. I enjoyed that. Like Darren said, any comments? If there's anything we've got wrong here, you know, we're just human, just let us know.
Yeah, I mean, it's what we said before. I mean, we just ask questions and then we go off and find some answers and we just chew the fat on it.
Exactly.
We're not saying we're experts in this field at all, but I think it will be a fascinating area to explore again.
Agreed.
So thanks, everyone. Take care, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this special ThinkWorks series within a series. We'll be back soon with another episode of Unexplained Mysteries, and of course the normal ThinkWorks format. In the meantime, however, don't forget to drop in your views on this episode on the corresponding forum post. Simply go to darreninforum.com/ThinkWorks forum, find the post for this episode, and tell us your theories on this mystery, as well as what other mysteries you would like Darren and Steve to discuss. Until then, take care all, and we'll see you soon.